Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
All right. Well, Joe, Casey Cunningham here. How are you today?
I'm fantastic.
Excellent. Well, let me just say thank you for the time where you get to provide some insight to our industry and help it out. As Zenix's entire goal is to continue to be a thought leader and bringing leadership to the table that are in the midst of what we consider one of the greatest times in the mortgage industry's history. So, Joe, I know you've been doing this for a while. How long have you been in the mortgage space?
August 12, 1996. So just passed over 24 years.
Wow. Well, you have a fairly sizable organization. So tell me, if you don't mind, and share with me, what are you working on right now with the amount of volume that's coming in?
I'd say growth. I mean, I think that right now is an excellent opportunity for companies that have the capacity to grow. There's a lot of originators who are facing extended underwriting wait times, and we don't have that here. We're down to under 3 days in underwriting, and so I'd say the growth and managing that growth, you've got to grow smart. You can't just go and blow up your company, because that will come back to bite you later.
Sure. Are you looking at growing with new people, new LOs or processors, or the established ones in the market?
Actually, both. I mean, with the right originators, right branch managers, we definitely, are interested in recruiting top people. But at the same time, we want to expand the footprint of the branches that we already have, making sure that they have at their disposal the things that they need for them to dominate their local markets.
Certainly. So are you today, is everybody working remote like the rest of the country primarily, or they coming in?
We're all over the country, so it just depends on where the branch location is. But here at corporate office, most of the people are actually in the office.
Really?
There might be two or three that aren't, but almost everybody is here in the office. We actually don't have any remote underwriters. They're all actually here.
Wow. So when you, they're almost all at corporate. That's highly unusual. So I'm going to guess that your corporate culture has not been, compromise isn't the right word, but hasn't been as challenged as many lenders that are all remote, that have gone all remote and they weren't used to it.
I don't think so. I mean, there was a point in time where we were probably about 70% here at corporate and 30% remote, but now it's 97%. I mean, it's rare. I mean, it's not necessarily the same every day. So some people might be remote for Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and others Tuesday, Thursday, but on the whole, probably 85-90% of the people come in every day. And then you've got maybe some other people who take some days off if they need them, or work from home as needed, because kids and family and such.
Joe, is that your preference, where everybody's in the office?
I think so. I think that certain jobs can be done remote, but it takes a special kind of person. Me personally, there's no way I could work remote. I have three small children, so that is an impossibility. And so I feel for the people who have to work remote, because I couldn't do it. I mean, they're a better person than I am.
Let me tell you, I have two small children. I should be a grandmother of small children, but I have an elementary school child and a middle school. And I got to tell you, I've never been more challenged when we were sort of in lockdown, that trying to work from home and being a mom at the same time. So yeah, I appreciate that you have that empathy for those people doing that on a daily basis.
I actually have it pretty easy, because I get to go to work. My wife was not able to. So
how would you define your culture, Joe?
I'd say it's family. It's a family feel. A lot of people have been here for a very long time, and We really look out for each other. We've never had a layoff in our entire existence. And so whereas most companies tend to bloat up in the good times and lay everybody off around Christmas time, we don't do that. And so there is a in my opinion, a unique stability at Southwest Funding that other companies just don't have.
Wow. That's highly unusual. I know you know that. So with the market being as heavy as it is right now, are you having capacity challenges since, or did you already have the staff on board since you hadn't laid them off?
We actually ran through capacity challenges about 5 years ago, and the owner decided at that point that he would plow money back in to make sure that we never had to deal with that again. So we've constantly been staffing up prior to more loans coming in the door so that we have way too much capacity in the winter times, but we have the right amount during the summer times. Like I said earlier, we are, you know, we're still at 3 days or less in underwriting.
That's outstanding. How do you think you became a family culture, if you don't mind me asking, Joe? Like, is it very intentional? Is there something that you're doing to create this vibrant culture?
I think that it starts with the owner. The owner really cares about the people who work here. He has, you know, it's been his baby for, you know, 27 years, and he just really looks out for everybody. It's more about the people than it is about the profits, in my opinion. And I wouldn't have come to this company, accepted the position, had it been probably for somebody else. I came here specifically to work for him, and it's paid off.
So what are you working on today? What's your highest priority that you think is going to have impact for the future?
Wow, lots and lots of projects. The biggest one is changing the way we onboard, because onboarding in the time of COVID is a unique challenge. Mm-hmm. And so you can't necessarily fly everybody in for a week and have them sit down. And, you know, some some people at corporate might not be okay with that. And of course, the recruit might not be okay with that either. So learning how to both recruit and onboard during the time of COVID is probably one of the biggest things that we're working on. And then, and like I said, there are a lot of other automations that we've been working on. It. We've rolled out a new CRM in the last couple months that we developed in-house that remarkets to your customers, and it's free of charge to our originators. So that was a really big project. It's taken us a couple of years to put out.
Wow. Well, in this new world of remote and COVID and not knowing what the future will hold, I got to say kudos to you guys as you've not made the adjustments always as necessary or as you think you might need to, because you know it will come. And this will come and go. We all know that. In your time as a leader right now, as you hire future leaders, what attributes are you looking for in leaders?
I'm looking for people who look at the way to solve problems instead of just pay attention to problems. Mm-hmm. My older brother went to the Naval Academy, graduated from Naval Academy, and one of the first pieces of literature that they had to read is called A Message to Garcia. And he gave it to me when I was still in high school. And it really meant basically take care of your business. And understand that you don't necessarily have a defined role within your organization. You go where you're needed. I think that that's just something in general that our industry doesn't do a very good job of. You know, a loan originator will say, well, this is what I do. And a processor will say, well, this is what I do. Whereas really, in the end, you're trying to close your loan, serve your community. I mean, like, you shouldn't put barriers up to, well, this is all I do, or, you know, that's somebody else's job. In the end, once you try to completely wall up your role or define your role, then I think that you start to limit your own self-growth.
Man, I love that. A message to Garcia. You know, quite often when I'm interviewing people, my message to anyone, whether they get the job at Zenix or not, is that exact message. Is if you go in with the attitude, put me where you need me. and you bring value, then you're going to be an impact player. And don't put confined barriers to your success by saying, this is my role. I love that. A message to Garcia.
It's actually written 120 years ago.
Really?
It's like a 5-page little short story that, you know, get a message to Garcia. And the guy didn't tell him how to go get the message. There's another story that I love. It's called, it was given to me by my first boss. It's called The Easter Ham Story. Have you ever read that?
No. What is that?
You have to Google because I don't want to.
Easter Ham Story. Okay.
The Easter Ham Story. I don't want to spoil the ending. It's only one page. I mean, it's a one page. I give that and the message to Garcia to anybody that comes to work for me.
Really? Okay, I'm writing it down. Easter Ham and message to Garcia.
The Easter Ham Story is it basically means question everything. When I was a little boy, we had a set of World Book encyclopedias, and my dad, you know, being a little boy, he'd go ask your dad, why this and why that and why this and why that? And he would always say, go look it up. Go look it up. And I'd say, why? And he'd say, well, because what if I tell you the wrong thing? What if I'm wrong? And then I tell you the wrong thing. And then you go through life for the rest of your life believing something that just isn't so. And he'd quote Mark Twain, who'd say, it's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for absolutely certain that just isn't so. And so that is another thing that's interesting about our industry, is that so many people absolutely know for certain something that just isn't so. And it actually takes away from the happiness that they could have, you know, understanding that you might not know everything, that things change. One of the reasons I've stayed in this industry, besides, you know, the amount of money that you can make, you know, and the flexibility that you can have with your time, is the fact that it's not the same every day, you know. Yeah. I liken it to a game of spades, which I played way too much of in college. It's the same game, but it's a different hand. Every day is a different hand, and how you play that hand helps determine, you know, your own happiness. And so I can't imagine being in a world where I went to work and it was the same thing every single day. I couldn't do it. And that's not what this industry is about. And it's funny because a lot of your life, my wife is the happiest person I've ever met. We've been together for a long, long time. And she is without a doubt the happiest person I've ever met. And a lot of her happiness comes from the way she just views things. And so whereas a lot of people view change as a negative, my first boss told me that nobody likes change but a wet baby. She views change as a happy point. And so when underwriting guidelines change, or this changes, or that changes, or what's going on in our market changes right now, you know, a lot of people freak out and get really angry instead of embracing it and saying, this is awesome. I get to grow. I get to do something different. I'm not having to, you know, do the same thing over and over and over again.
Wow. I love you. Let me tell you, that innovation is one of the core values of Zenix. And mine is, in any interview, is if you don't like change, this is not the right place. Because without change, you're not growth. There's no growth. And so things become stagnant, you get bored. And that's where why so many businesses don't make it, is they don't innovate and they don't get creative. And to me, ignorance is the person who thinks they know everything. Right. So
true. I agree. People forget, people confuse, you know, ignorance with stupidity, but it's not the same thing, right? I mean, ignorance means you don't know something. Stupidity means you can't learn something. It's two totally different things. And
true,
we're all ignorant, right? I mean, everybody, you know, I mean, I try to focus on what I do well and know what I know and know when I don't know something. And that's actually kind of tough, right? To say, I don't know this. I mean, because if you're admitting your own, you know, failings. But I mean, a lot of people are dependent on me to make good decisions. And so if I go into something not really knowing it, then it's my job to know it, or not to, you know, try to base decisions on knowledge instead of hope.
Absolutely. Listen, you and I could talk for hours because I'm so much in alignment with you. I am probably one of the few, not few, but I'll just say I'm a person who, like, I am a voracious studier. My husband is too. Every day is a new discovery and a new learning. And, you know, we've taught our kids, I think, similar to what you shared. And that's be open to learn, look it up, and always validate the source, and making sure that you're really studying the truth, right? So, Joe, are you guys today as a company, do y'all drive that into your corporate culture? Like, education's a core value for us at Zenix. Like, everybody here has to be taking a course, reading a book, growing personally, whether it's in their role or in their life. Because, hey, we're an education company. So if we're going to educate you guys and we're not at the top of our game, then how can we dare say that that's a value everybody should have? But do y'all drive that into your company culture?
I will say that operations does a really good job of that. They will pick a book and they will read through the book and they will, it's almost like book study. They'll come, you know, have a meeting where all of operations gets together and they'll talk about different things that they thought about the book, learned in the book, those sorts of things. I feel like we were getting better about the field personnel pre-COVID. We were doing a better job. We were bringing in people, you know, 20 people at a time, having roundtable discussions, doing stuff like that, getting books out that I, you know, some of them are books that I read a long time, you know, Who Moved My Cheese and those sorts of things. That, right. Because you can't read, you can't give field people necessarily 400 page books. You know, it's just not the way we work. So, but then COVID hit and it's definitely slowed that process down.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, to be honest with you, it's put it on hold, if we're being honest. You know, everybody's kind of moved towards, you know, making sure that we're managing the business that, and this is, you know, 1 in 10 year event. And so you've got to make sure that you're taking advantage. My mom would say, make hay while the sun's shining. So, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I might be of the opinion this is a once in a lifetime event. I don't know if we're ever going to see this kind of, craziness with volume and opportunity and advancement, but you know, we're going through a great awakening right now in so many areas. So quick question, since first of all, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner, and I'm just like you from the standpoint we're running our business every day, taking care of our families. When I love that you said something about your company, by the way, right? You're a family culture. Because ours is God first, family second, right? And Zenix, we're way down the list. You know, but we want to give back. And do y'all do much community work in the company?
We do. We actually try to. Obviously, we do work with different companies, Hope Store and things like that. But mainly, we try to do it in the communities that we service. And so the branch manager, one of the first things that they learn in onboarding is to make sure that they get a charity that they can partner with and bring some value to their community. I did, when I was a branch manager, my big one was Hope Store. And then also helped the Lighthouse in Alabama, which are domestic violence shelters. And so I met with the director over there and it was eye-opening what they have to deal with, what is a ugly underbelly of America that a lot of people don't know about. And the domestic violence shelter is in any community can always use help, you know, and it's about awareness. You know, the first thing she told me was just bringing it to the forefront, letting, you know, having the discussion, saying it exists, that's a big deal. And so I was pretty committed to helping her with that.
Well, I'm on, I was on a board, just literally got off, but it was, we literally housed 200 women and children these women are either addicted, abused, or homeless. And I'm very aware of what the unseen is happening because we live in this beautiful bubble. Most of us do within our space, right? In the mortgage space, what's really happening behind the scenes. And it's as disturbing and sad. And if we can all really raise awareness, which and also will raise the outreach, then we all win. So now in operations today, how is there, are they feeling overwhelmed and are they in a really good place? Are they working extra hours?
I'd say that they rotate some, you know, they rotate Saturdays. So it's not that everybody's working. And then there's, you know, like this weekend, no one's going to work. But last weekend, probably half of them came in. And the weekend before that, it was the other half. So I'd say that And we're hiring underwriters. We hired two this week, actually. So I can't really speak for, I mean, I'd say, sure, everybody thinks that they're being overworked right now. I mean, I can't speak for them, but I would say that I think everybody's on board with the idea that this isn't going to go on forever. And so you need to make your money while you can make your money. We don't have area managers here. We're kind of unique in that for our size. So all the branch managers roll directly up to me.
Wow. How many do you have?
98.
Wait a minute. You have 98 yes. direct reports?
Oh, no, that's just the field people. That's not the people here.
Oh, my gosh. How many do you have there?
I don't know, probably another 10.
Wow. Look at that. That's, by the way, you're right. That is a very unique structure. I can't imagine that you don't have a middle guy that's helping you. But it says
it helps with recruiting, though, right? So I've been in mortgage for a long time. I've only been in corporate for 3 years. So I ran a branch for our company for 10. And one of the things I liked about this company is that upper management is as involved with your life as you want them to be, right? Yep. I don't need someone lording over me and telling me what I need, you know, what I need to do today. I'm good. I don't need that. That's the whole reason of being in this industry to begin with, right? Is to have some sense of ownership of your own space without someone telling you, you know, I mean, I feel like we've got guide rails, right? But we're not, we don't wake up in the morning and say, you're going to do this, or you're going to do that, or you're going to do this other thing. We just try to go and make relationships within the community, do a really good job, close the loans, follow up after the close, and, you know, do a good job.
Well, what a pleasure it is to meet you and have a few minutes with you. And I know we went longer, my apologies, but it was nice to chat with you. You're easy to talk to. So listen, have a blessed day and thanks for the time. And we look forward to staying in touch. You now have a new friend in the industry.
Yes, ma'am. It was nice to talk to you.
It was nice talking to you too. And take care.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/insidethemortgagemind.